Welcome to the Soul Savage Show. We've got Qlin Green and EB and Whitney coming up. Hey, let me do something for you real quick. I probably need to go to a music break because we haven't connected them yet. So anyway, let's do that and we'll get this thing going for you. All right. Studio W the Buzz. Alright, welcome to the Soul Savage Show. EB, Qlin. Alright, Qlin, you're calling me right now. I'm on the line. Qlin, EB?
EB is here.
EB, where's Qlin?
Qlin should be here as well.
Alright. And you know, I played a song, the song that she sent me, and it was fantastic. That was, Mono Neon, Daru Jones, featuring Daru Jones, Lance Lucas, when, the Neon Pearly Gates open. So we did that, and we hadn't connected yet, but anyway, that song was playing. So how about Whitney? Is Whitney on the line with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Whitney is here.
Yeah, Whitney is here, and we're still looking for Qlin, are we? Qlin.
I'm on.
All right, we're here. All right, I was just telling EB and Whitney that we just played Mono Neon featuring Daru Jones, Lance Lucas, when the Neon Pearly Gates opened. So anyway, welcome to the Soul Savage Show, guys. I'm looking forward to a great show. Let's get it.
Hey, welcome to the Soul Savage Radio Show. We're going to start this off. We got a special guest on right now, veteran musician, drummer extraordinaire. He just out here popping in these streets. I don't know. He got so many credits. We go through it when we start the interview. But I just want to introduce our guest this song, Mr. Daru Jones. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, how's it going, Radio World?
Man, we doing great. We doing good because you all now. What you up to, man? I know you got so much going on. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to keep up, and I'm glad to be alive.
Right, right. We go start this off. I'm gonna get my questions out the way because I don't have that many. I don't think I have as many as last week, but I got a few questions. I'll just start this off. I was gonna say, you know, you grew up in church and you've been like a well-rounded musician. But what age was it that you knew that this was something you wanted to pursue full time?
I started at the age of 4. So I knew, you know, I came up playing in church, and, you know, my mom and dad, they're both musicians. They both play organ and piano, and rest in peace, my pops passed. It's like a year anniversary. He passed on August the 2nd, so rest in peace. But, you know, I was inspired going to church at the age of 4. Yep.
That's when you knew, right off that, that's what you wanted to do, like.
Well, it wasn't until my young teenage years, when I was around 14 years old. At that time, they were doing a lot of stage plays where they would have a live band playing the music, you know, for the people acting on stage. I got an opportunity. This was in Saginaw, Michigan. Vanessa Bell Armstrong was the featured artist in this stage play, and I was a part of the backing band. It was a gospel jazz trio, and we were in the pit. The band was stationed below, so you couldn't see the musicians. So the stage play, you know, went on. I forgot the name of it, but after the stage play, they invited the musicians to come out of the pit so they can acknowledge everybody's names. And after that, people came up to me, and it was like the compliments that I've gotten. It was like, oh man, it gave me the confidence and encouragement that made me feel like, oh, maybe I could take this serious. So I knew at that time, you know. So at that time, I was like, okay, I wanted to start taking it serious. That was a turning point for me. Yep.
Wow. And then you also, like, you performed, recorded, toured with, you know, artists like Jack White, Slum Village, Talib Kweli, Jamie Liddell?
Yeah, Jamie Liddell. That's correct.
Kim Burrell, Rance Allen, and John B. I know recently I just saw you do some stuff with John B. in concert. And
it's funny. I'm sorry. I'll let you finish.
Oh, no. I was just saying that, and then I know you named some of your drummer influences, like, you know, Questlove, you know, Danny Davis, Steve Smith. I think I'm forgetting a few. I think Elvin Jones is just one that's popping in my head. But yeah, those influences in terms of drummer wise. But what were the influences that made you feel or think like this is how I want to play music?
Okay, well, I want to go back. You mentioned a very important influence. This guy by the name of Dana Davis. He's from Detroit, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dana was the guy at the time. He was the drum guy. We would all go see him. He played for a group called the Whinings. Legendary gospel group.
He
was their live touring drummer. And, you know, Dana, he was put on a lot of those gospel records, you know, in the 90s. There's a group called Witness. He was just like the man. He was known for his pocket. Those that know, you know, the drumming world, pocket, that's just when you keep playing a simplex beat. You're not going too crazy. And he was like the pocket king. That's why he got a lot of work. So we will always go see Dana. You know, Dana was like the man. You know, he was, you know, everybody looked up to him. He had his own style. You know, he always came, had a leather jacket on. You know what I'm saying? You can see he had his swag.
Right.
He was known for his pocket. So, you know, I looked up to him as a kid. And then there was another drummer I looked up to, this guy named Michael Williams. He played with a group from Detroit called Commission. That was a group that Fred Hammond started in. You guys know about Fred Hammond. So Commission was the group that Michael Williams played in, and he was another Detroit legend. He was one of the another gospel kings at that time. And they were all known for playing this pocket, you know what I'm saying? But Dana was a little fancy. He had a little bit more chops. But anyway, those two drummers really inspired me at a young age. But then, I, as a kid, I had a lot of older mentors. you know, in my life, and one of my mentors was into jazz. So just to give a short, I don't want to be long-winded. But anyway, the church I came up in was Kojic, was Gospel Church of God in Christ, and everything outside of gospel was secular, and we was told we not to listen to. So it was a no-no, but one of my influence, he was into jazz, and he put me on to, like, Tony Williams. He gave me this Tony Williams Live in New York. It was a VHS tape. And that opened my mind to, like, this jazz. You know what I'm saying? I was like, yo, this is crazy drumming. So I wanted to get into more of that genre. And I started finding out about, like, Buddy Rich, Elvin Jones, and this whole new, you know, vocabulary of drumming. And I was like, dang, that just opened me up to that world. And then I got exposed to this guy by the name of Vinny Caliuta, through these Buddy Rich Memorial Series concerts. This was part two. It was Buddy Rich. I mean, it was Vinny Caliuta, Steve Gadd, and Dave Weckl. And that VCR tape changed my life because of those three drummers that were featured. One of the drummers that stand out was a guy by the name of Steve Gadd. Played with, Steve Gadd played in a lot of legendary groups. He played with Steely Dan. Yeah, and what I admired by Steve Gadd was he was a very diverse drummer. You could put him in any genre, and he wouldn't overplay. He would just get the job done, but he also had his unique identity. So that was one of the drummers that I was like, man, I want to be able to genre bend and not just be a gospel drummer. I want to be able to go do jazz, soul music, and hip, you know, whatever there was, and get the job done. So to make a long story short, he was one of my big influences as far as, like, as well as Vinny Caliuta, but Vinny was more advanced. He played a lot of chops, but he had his own style. But definitely guys like Steve Gadd and Omar Hakim. Omar played with Madonna. He played with a lot of people, but they were diverse. So those type of drummers, those what I gravitated toward because they were diverse. You could put them in any genre situation, and they got the job done. Yep, that's that.
And you kind of added on with what I was saying, because I was thinking, like, with influences, I just know for me, just being a musician as well, like, certain musicians I look at, and I remember, like, just getting into a phase of just listening to Rick James records, and even the records that he was just playing the drum parts himself, like, it was like, I could, like, see myself being influenced by that, and then also listen to Funkadelics, like, how, like, that offbeat and the folk music that sort of have, like, that, like a Fleetwood Mac, like the drummers in that, and then also with Chaka Khan, Rufus Band, Crazy, and then Funkadelics, but that was more, and then Jay Dilla. I know you're a Jay Dilla head. I was gonna ask you this, like, when was it, was, like, that influence in particular, did it, like, sort of, like, sort of sum up everything that you were trying to, like, your, in terms of your ear as a musician, did it turn into another, cause I feel like for me, like, everything, like, I hear now with, like, hip-hop, I always try to slow it down like a Dilla beat, but is that the same for you?
Yeah, you know what, I just want to give a little bit of history. So, you know, as a drummer and musician, I evolved in my career. Earlier in my career, you know, I started out playing gospel, and then eventually I got into jazz, and then at that particular time when I was doing jazz, I started being into the fusion. It was a lot of fusion music coming out. You heard, right. You had Herbie Hancock, Chick Corea, so on and so forth. So I started playing that style. And then when I was in school, my friends, they went to hip hop. So, you know, during that time, you had a lot of the producers like Dr. Dre. They were sampling James Brown, you know what I'm saying? And Eric Sermon.
Right.
Premier, all those producers, they were sampling a lot of James Brown records. And I was like, man, everybody started, you know, that funky drummer, like those type of vibes, just playing these loops. These loop type of patterns, and I was like, I wanted to be down with hip hop, so I was like, man, I started getting into, you know, where they got the sampling from, you know, from Clyde Stubblefield, and then that's when I got into that style of drumming that was just more simplex, playing these loops, and then eventually, I think some of my first introduction besides Dilla was RZA from Wu-Tang Clan, because RZA, if you listen to RZA like the Wu-Tang records.
A lot of those
drum programmers were off beat, and and RZA wasn't even, he, I don't even think RZA knew what he was doing. I just think that he didn't, he made, he was just using, the equipment that he was using didn't always loop everything, you know, in perfect timing.
Where it was right. I get you. Yeah.
It became an art form. So to me, that was really, the RZA stuff was like that offbeat Dilla. You know, I wasn't really into Dilla back then. I mean, I knew eventually of his work with the Sex High, but at that time, it was like RZA was like the Dilla to me. Because of that production and the way that he chopped up those Kung Fu samples, the drums were offbeat. And then eventually, I started reading the credits of some of the things that I was into, like, you know, De La Soul and Busta Rhymes. And then I eventually find out that Dilla was, you know, the producer behind some of those hits that I liked. And then eventually, like, oh, then that's like, oh, wow. Then it made sense because a lot of those drum breaks that Clyde and like Idris Muhammad, you know, it wasn't perfect. It was just kind of, it was a little off, a little sloppy, but it still worked. It still worked. And I was like, dang, Dilla just wanted to implement that on the drum machine. Everything was just not so perfectly on, you know, certain producers, like Pete Rock, you know, a lot of those producers, their beats were dope, but everything was just so perfect. You know, it wasn't nothing dragging, everything was perfect. But Dilla was making his beats and the drum program a little sloppy. He wasn't the only person, but it was others that was doing it as well, but, you know, he just kind of, like, really made it popular. And yeah, and I started getting into that, and then eventually I had the opportunity to work with Slum Village, which was a dream of mine. So I just stopped right there. I don't want to go too long with it or go off the question.
Your style play, I feel like, is one that's like, when you talk about like the presentation of like a musician, like if I would say like, this is like the whole package deal, like, I would just look at your style of play. I like how you play like old school, like with your, I think you play right-handed. You play that in your left hand, you play on the accent with like old school style, like jazz way. And the whole thing. Like when you start doing that, like is that always how you play, or is it just something you just like got naturally started doing? Or was it intentional for you to do that?
No, so basically, in the drumming, when you're holding the sticks, there's what you call traditional, which is when the drumstick on the left hand is propped in between the second finger, and it looks like it's angled off. And then they have the match grip, which means both grips are the same on left and right. So basically, when I started drumming in church, everybody in church played match grip. But then one of my older mentors that I looked up to playing drums, he was another guy that was looking, that was checking out the jazz players like Tony Williams and Buddy Rich and all these guys, they were playing with this traditional grip. And he was the only guy at church that I saw play that grip. And I was like, man, I was blown away. And then I learned how to, you know, grip the stick like that. And, you know, I was another one of the only people in church, you know, at a young age, I'm talking like 13, 14, playing traditional grip. It took a while for me to develop my muscles. But, you know, I did start seeing the advantages for me playing with that grip, and I just stuck with it. But then later on, when I started learning about rock and roll and other genres, I felt like the drummers were getting more power when they played match grip because they were using their whole arm. It's hard to explain, but anyway.
Yeah. Oh, I get you. This is why musicians listen. They get you.
So anyway, I started going in between both of the grip holding. Sometimes when I would want to get more power, I go mass grip. And then other when I want to get more ghost notes and subtleties, I would switch to traditional, which is the more known as in more the jazz grip with that. Right. The left hand, it's like an angle off. So hopefully that answered the question.
I just want to know, was that like always an intentional thing? Because I see you like switch off the time. But I was like, yo, like, I always thought it was cool that, like, the way you played that, I was like, I've never seen anybody that played mostly hip-hop music do that. And I was like, yo, that's dope. But it was like, you do the loops and all that stuff. I was going to get into all that. I only got, like, two more questions. I'll be done. And I'll let my co-host ask you some questions. But in terms of, like, you know, like, you get a song and it's like the more complex it is, it's like I feel like the more you become better, like the more the harder it is to learn it is when you start like keep mastering it. So I wanted to know, like, what was a song to where it took you like a long, like what song is it that took so long to for you to master it? And then is there ever been a song to where you like, after you like figured it out, you was like, I did that shit, basically?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. Wow. I would say, you know, like I said, in my career, I evolved as a drummer. So like in the beginning of my career, I started in gospel, and that was that vibe, pocket, jazz. So when I started getting, when I evolved into the jazz career and I started getting those type of gigs and I had to learn those covers, you know, thank good. The crazy thing about it, at that time, there was no YouTube. So we had to transcribe.
Right, exactly.
We had to, we didn't have nothing to look at. We had to just figure it out.
Figure it out, yep.
I thank God that I came up during that time. I think it gave me a little bit of an advantage.
Right.
You know, just being able to adapt and just figure things out, it gave me that type of, you know, that type of confidence where I won't get scared if somebody put me in a situation. I'll figure it out. So yeah, we had to just transcribe and I think that was the best training for me. So when I was playing the jazz and stuff, when I would get those gigs and we play the cover, those covers, you know, I think it's important when people ask you to play with them, it's important to learn the music. A lot of people, they like to just improv and go on a gig. It takes a certain individual to be able to learn the music. And I feel like that's why I've been blessed to maybe get more calls than the next person, because I want to pay attention to detail. And if my boss is not pleased with what I'm doing, I'm not doing my job. So for that's my first rule. You know, learning a song, like the song, like the record, and then if my boss asks me to, you know, to improv and do my own thing, I'll add that on top. You know what I'm saying? But there have been sometimes some situations that I've been in where it may have been straight ahead jazz or certain things that I may not have trained myself in those areas. You know, it may have been a challenge, but for the most part, I just try to learn the basics. You can never go wrong if you learn the basics. If that's all you can do, just play the basics. And the basics is sometimes, even in regular music, playing the 2 and 4. That's a very simple beat that you can ever play. Mm-hmm. 2 and 4, play that beat. That beat works with everything. You don't have to be complex. So I have been in situations where, you know, I feel like I could have, you know, done better, but for the most part, I'm thankful that I was able to just play the basics. I may not have played all the licks that I want to play, but at least I got through the gig. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the next time I went, got back in the shed, and I tried to advance myself and, you know, but practice those different vocabulary. So when I would get in another situation where I was playing covers, I can really go in, you know, and then for other genres, it's the same rules. Like I said, it's very important when you get hired by somebody to go study their music and try to just learn it like the album first. Because when people come out to them shows, they want to hear what they heard on the record. You know
exactly.
What I mean? Unless you're playing jazz or certain free jazz or certain things that require you to just be loose.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, learn the record. You know what I'm saying? That's what worked for me.
Yeah, you hit on everything that I was saying, that I've been saying all the time on the show, in terms of pocket and, like, just in general, like, musicians, like, I feel like it should be, like, a common goal. Like, if you're going to jam, like, let it be a common goal to where something is going to happen, not to where you just playing around all the time. Especially if it's, like, a gig on the line, like, nah, we're not fixing a jam for, like, 2 hours for nothing.
Another thing, in all genres, regardless of what it is, people want to dance. They want to be able to hear that.
Exactly.
They want to be able to feel that pulse. So if you're playing, even if you're playing jazz, people want to still be able to feel that pulse. And sometimes within the drummer, the pulse is the hi-hat. The hi-hat is going clicking on the 2 and 4, and the drummer on with his hands, he's going crazy, but that pulse on the 2 and 4 is keeping everybody in time. So outside of jazz and just pop music and hip-hop, people just want to be able to, if people are not dancing or bobbing their head up and down or bop or dancing, you're not doing your job. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You haven't done your job.
Right,
so
exactly.
I think that's
exactly.
Very, very important to be able to connect that pulse, that heartbeat. That's very important as a drummer. We are the heartbeat. We got to make sure that we're keeping that pulse going. Regardless of what we're doing, we got to make sure we're keeping that 2-4
positive.
So, yeah, that's that.
I only have three more questions, and then I'm going to pass it. But work with Mono Neon, and Marcus, the baddest guitarist I've ever heard in my life. He's, like, top five of me. Marcus, watch out. Crazy. But you collaborate with them all the time. When did it start? Because I think when I noticed y'all collaborate, was y'all collaborating before NAMM? So I was listening, and NAMM is, like the Grammys for musicians. It's like a musician convention. So did you link up with him before that, or was that where the magic happened? Was that I forgot what NAMM it was. I think it was like 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, no, me and Marcus, we met before that. We met through a mutual friend of ours from New York named DJ Spinner. He's a tastemaker, one of my favorite people on the planet. He's a very good guy. DJ Spinner, DJ producer. If you Google him, you'll find out what he's done. So DJ Spinner connected me and Marcus. One day Spinner called me out the blue and was like, yo, have you heard of this cat, Marcus Machado? And I'm like, who is this cat? He sounded like he was Mexican. I don't know.
I was going to say, you thought he was Hispanic.
Hispanic Machado. I'm like, all right. But he was like, yo, this Marcus Machado is like the next up-and-coming Jimi Hendrix meets hip hop, you know what I'm saying? He was ready to raving about Marcus, and he sent me a link to check out some works that Marcus had did. And then just so happened I was in New York with Marcus, because I was living there at the time. Marcus was performing. I'm getting ahead of myself. So he was like, I want to put you and Marcus together, and he put Marcus on the phone, and Marcus was like, yo, send it. Spinner asked Marcus if Marcus ever put a band together, who would the drummer be? And Marcus mentioned my name, and Spinner was blown away. He was like, yo, I can put you on the phone with him right now. So that's what Spinner called me up and introduced Marcus over the phone. We chopped it up, and it just so happened Marcus was performing at the Blue Note. It's a legendary jazz club in New York, and Marcus invited me to come out to the show. I went to see him. I was blown away, and then a week or so later, I was just happened to be doing a clinic at the Guitar Center. Marcus came out. And I think I'm telling this story kind of flip-flop. I think my clinic happened before I actually met Marcus. I think Marcus Blue Note Show was out there. He came to my Guitar Center clinic. But anyway, we met, and Marcus was like, yo, we're going to do some work. Met her in person at the Blue Note Show. And we just clicked. We clicked. And fast forward, I just so happened to be, I had just recorded some stuff with Doug Wimbish. He's the bassist for Living Color. I'm sure you know who Living Color is. They've been around forever. And Doug Wimbish, he plays bass for Living Color. We had just did some recordings, and I was trying to figure out what to do with those recordings, and I had took them back to New York. I chopped them up because I'm a producer, and I made like 10 tracks out of them. Got on the phone with Marcus, and I was like, yo, get some stuff with Doug Wimbish. Maybe you could add some stuff on top of this. Send it to Marcus. Marcus added some magic, and that's when our trio band was formed, after Marcus put his heat on what me and Ben Doug recorded. And that sparked that band, DMD, which is our initials. The first initials is myself, Don Rue. The M initial was for Marcus, and the last is for Doug Wimbish. So that's what started that that trio. But yeah, that's how me and Marcus met. Yep.
As though, and then Maronia, all y'all, I feel like three of y'all together, that I feel like the chemistry is like there, the pocket, your pocket, and then on top of Mono Neon. If y'all know who Mono Neon is, y'all living under a rock, because he's one of the best bass players out there. But his ghost notes in your pocket is crazy. It's like the best combination. And also, I wanted to switch to talk about Pete Rock. You're part of the assembled band of his, Pete Rock and the Soul Brothers, legendary hip-hop producer, one of my top five. Again, another top five of mine, Pete Rock. I just got to throw it out there. But you were assembled, you're part of that assembled band. What is that like? I know that, like, his record, you know, Timeless, CL Smooth, Timeless record. What does it feel like to, like, have one of your musical heroes, like, back or be a part of a band that he's assembled? How does that feel like to play for Pete Rock?
It's flattering and honor. You know, I never thought that I would one day, and it's been like that for my career. Like, some of my heroes that I looked up to, I would either meet them, I would talk, you know, we would have a conversation, and they'd become a fan of my work. But anyway, to fast forward to Pete Rock, such an honor. I had the opportunity to work with him. He did a project with a rapper called Smoke Dizzle from Harlem, New York. They had a project that came out a couple years ago called Don't Smoke Rock. And they were having problems with clearing the samples. So anyway, by me being, you know, good friends with Pete, we just was on chopping it up. And he was like, man, can you put together a unit to replay these samples so we can put this record out? So I ended up linking him up with the band members that I hired from Jamie Liddell's band. And the Royal Pharaohs, that was the name of that band. Fast forward. That's what built my relationship with Pete Rock 2 years ago. And then this time around, Pete was, you know, having some career changes. He wanted to start doing a live band thing. And I got the recommendation from a good friend of mine, Renee. He's the lead vocalist from John A.
Really? Oh, yeah. She sure is. You said she's, like, she gets in on the set, she said?
Yeah, she recommended my name all the time for Pete.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I guess Pete was asking around who should he get to put in his band, and she was you got to get Daru Jones. And Pete, we had already worked together, but, you know, so many musicians that he worked with before, he worked with Glasper and all these other guys, so I'm sure that he had a lot of options to choose from, but that was one of the people that co-signed, you know, me for that. Went to Music Jazz Festival that happens in New York in January. He got an opportunity to perform there, but he had to put it together a band. So when I got the call to become the music director, also handpicked the musicians that I thought would be the right fit for this band. And through my career, I've always gotten music director jobs. They call that the MD, where I would put together the musicians that I feel would work best, you know, for those situations. I was music director with Talib Ali and a lot of other bands. So for Pete Rock, that's what I was hired in, to become the music director. It was an honor and a privilege, and yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. It's like a dream come true. Yep.
And this is my last question. Is there anything you haven't done yet in terms of, like, the realms of your musicianship? Because I feel like if you talk about, like, a musician, in terms of popping, I feel like I would, like, point them to you in terms of, like, merchandising, doing the things you're supposed to do as a musician besides, you know. You know, I think touring, I feel like it was just an article that just came out that said that 12-13% of the billions in the music industry, only 12-13% of musicians were getting paid or something like that. And they say mostly it came from them touring. And so I want to say, in terms of, like, your musicianship, is there, like, anything, because you've toured, you've done, like, everything, like touring, you know, merchandising, like everything in terms of musicianship. So is there anything you haven't done yet in that scope of musicianship?
Yeah, I mean, it's some things that I want to tap into. I was blessed to be an extra in the Luke Cage series that comes on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
I appeared in the finale of the second season, performing with the legendary Rakim, and also Adrian Young and Shahid and the whole band. So, you know, I want to definitely get into doing more of those. Like, you know, I won't say, like, become an actor, but just being more into the movie and get more involved into the movie scene, whether it's doing movie scoring and get more involved in that. I mean, I've been blessed, you know, to have some products in the marketplace that I'm really – that's a dream come true. Like, you know, I have a drum set, my own signature drum set with PDP Drums, DSDW. Which is like one of the best drum companies in the world, and I guess I'm plugging them at that. But you know, I have my own cymbal line, Pisces cymbals, and I have other things in the marketplace. So those are dreams come true, and that doesn't happen for everybody, and I'm thankful for those. I definitely want to dig more into the merchandise. And I realized that I have a brand. I have a brand. I worked hard for it. And I'm very thankful. But I remember when the social networking, the MySpace and all those tools came around, you know, I used those to my advantage. You know, I recorded, I took my video camera and I, you know, filmed myself with all these different bands, and I was doing it when a lot of people weren't doing it. I was documenting myself and it paid off. It paid off. And, yeah, I mean, there's some other things I want to tap into. You know, I'm on my fitness game now, you know, trying to get, you know, make sure I can be around, you know, to continue on. Cause a lot of the musicians, you know, they're dying off, you know, because of bad health. So I'm definitely tapping into that world, you know, of doing more things that could be edifying to the community for us, you know, black people and all musicians to eat better and take care of their temple and their body. So I want to, you know, definitely get into that and figure out ways, you know, to integrating the music and the positivity, the energy and just promote that. You know, so it's enough negativity being pushed. So I definitely want to get more into that and with the vegan and vegetarian, dieting. I mean, although I've been slipping, I've been going back into some of my old habits, but for the most part, I definitely want to dive into that and just using my brand and my influence to bring up the next generation, you know what I'm saying? And give them some other insights to look into. Everybody can't rap. Everybody's not called to be a drummer. Everybody's not called to, but there's other things you can play your part. You can contribute to this world and make it, you know, make it better and be an inspiration. You know what I'm saying? So movies, definitely get into movies and whatever else the creator has in store. You know, I'm open to it. I'm open to it. Yep.
I'll be open to some, Daru Jones, kale snacks.
I have some ideas, but I don't like to, you know, I like to keep, you like to kind of.
I'm just throwing it out there. If you want to make some, I guess. If it's just me, you with the drum logo on the front of the kale snack. I get it.
Hilarious.
I'm just saying.
That's hilarious.
If y'all can go ahead, Whitney or Evie, who want to go, as I'm done with my questions. You go ahead.
It was nice to chat with you.
Oh no, I'm still here. I'm just, no, I'm still here. I'll just tell them to go ahead. They can ask their questions.
Okay.
Hey, this is Whitney.
Oh, go ahead. Oh.
You had mentioned earlier how like Dana was known for like his pocket and that drummers are known like as the heartbeat, and you mentioned different people that you looked up to who are really diverse. So I was wondering like what would you like to be known for? Like what's the legacy you would like to leave behind?
That you can put me in pretty much various genres. I won't say all because there's some genres that I haven't got into yet. But for the most part, all the popular genres, that was a well-versed drummer that you could put in any situation that would get the job done. Also, convey this energy, this positive energy, you know what I'm saying, that will help inspire. But yeah, that would be the goal. And also have a unique voice, and I have a very unique setup that's, you know, I think that's different. You know, it's definitely been inspired by some things that I saw, but it's definitely my own, and I'm still growing. So just, you know, having a unique everything from, you know, the appearance, drum kit, and the energy, also being able to genre bend and be put in any situation and being able to get the job done. Yep. That's it.
Okay, and just to piggyback on something you said, you had mentioned, also mentioned earlier, like, that when you were growing up, that it was important to actually, like, learn the music, learn the basics and all of that before you put, your own twist on it, and I think that's great advice, that could be applied in a lot of different scenarios. What other, like, advice or wisdom could you give to, musicians that maybe are trying to follow, like, in your footsteps or maybe do something similar or just anything, that you could put out there to help somebody else?
That's a good question. One of the easiest ones is practice make perfect.
Yeah.
That's what, right. That's what I've been told. And consistency is everything. You stay consistent, you know, consistent with doing something, regardless of what's happening around you, people will start taking notice. It's just like when a new brand comes out. Sometimes people have the resources to really push it where it can pop off. And other times you just got to let that brand build on its own. And you got to just keep going. I found the lane that I wanted to be in early, right? And I just stuck with it regardless of what was going on around me. So finding the lane is just like fads. You have what's popular. Everybody jumps on whatever's popular right now, but when that fad goes out, they got to jump onto what's next. Well, find out whatever your fad is going to be, not even fad, but whatever your lane is going to be. Continue to do that regardless of what's happening around you, and then eventually people will start hiring you for what you do. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. You build something where people was like, yo, I want to get this person because they got this flavor, and it's not like what's popular, but it's their thing. You know what I'm saying? Another thing, too, is, you know, the basics, be on time, be nice. Because a lot of times people hire you not all the time because of your skill set. They hire you because you're a nice person. And they want to know if they can be able to tour and be around you. You know, you have a lot of people that have a lot of talent, but you don't want to go and be on tour with them because they're moody. You know what I'm saying? Or they may not know how to handle their habits. You know what I'm saying? It's no judgment. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their habits. And some people, you know, they don't know how to handle it, but they may get tore down or drunk before the show, you know, or they may get high before the show, but you want to be able to handle your habits. The basics, just be friendly to people, and when you're trying to get on, it's not always good to, like, when you go to these conventions, like what was mentioned earlier, the NAMM show was one of the biggest trade shows to have in L.A., also Nashville, but L.A. is a big one. When you go there, you go network with all these brands, and sometimes all people, they just think that when they go to these companies, to be like, man, put me on, this is what I've done, here's my resume. Sometimes that's the last thing you want to do, because they have 100,000 people doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Makes sense.
So what works for me is just building, just being easy, being cool, and talking to them about the opposite. Nothing that have anything to do with drums, just other things outside of that. And then just saying, hey, here's my email. Let me just keep you posted on some things that I'm doing, and just let me stay in touch. You just keep seeing those same people every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you build this conference with them, then one day they're gonna, hey, I got this new equipment, can you try it out? That's the door open for you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's
right.
One of the things that work for me. And another thing that works, that's a good thing, is be a team player. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you're playing in these bands, it's not all about you. It's all about you making everybody around you sound good, as well as the vocalist. If you play behind a vocalist, you want to make sure you're making them sound good. A lot of musicians, they get it twisted. They get a name for themselves, and they just start showboating. They go to the gig, and they doing all this fancy stuff. And it's like, that's not being a team player. Everybody have their role. So just another thing, if you can, just try to make sure you're being a team player and making everybody sound good. And that might get you a few more calls than next man. That's my advice for today.
Right. No, I mean, that's great advice. And again, that's advice that can be applied, like, to multiple professions, like being a good person, like, it's that simple. And then one other question, just because I'm not a drummer or a musician, but a huge music fan all around. I had read up a little bit before the show about grits. Can you talk a little bit more about that for any of our listeners that may be musicians or working towards the drums and things like that? What's the importance of the grips, and is there any advice that you can give, like, to someone who's trying to learn maybe the different grips, or who are, like, switching between, like, what's the best one for certain situations and things like that?
That's a really good question. So, you know, everybody's not built the same way. You know, you have some people that's slim, some people that's heavy. So basically, as a drummer, when you go to the store, they have the drumsticks, right? So they have all type of sizes. Everybody's built differently. So you want to just go through each drumstick and find a stick that works for your body type. You know what I'm saying? You have six pack that can be very skinny and very lightweight. So you, if you know you're heavy handed, you know not to get those six because you're going to break those early. You know what I'm saying? So if that makes any sense as far as the grips, you know, find a grip that works for you. Maybe mesh grip is good for you, but you know, you can go to school and learn how to hold, you know, how to do anything, right? So eventually you can build your muscles to be able to adjust to the mesh grip. This depends on how consistent you are. You just gotta keep doing it every day or whenever you have a chance to get behind your instrument. And that applies to anything. But for me, I just felt like by me genre bending, when I went from playing, like the jazzier stuff was more dynamic, meaning the music would be loud and soft. So that's, you know, that the match, I mean, the traditional work for that setting. But when I started playing rock and roll, you know what I'm saying? That's a more harder, aggressive, genre, which a lot of times we're just playing loud the whole time. You feel me? So
I felt like the
match grip, although I'm going between them both, you know, it took me years to develop muscles to be able to play hard with the traditional grip. But at the same time, I feel like the match grip works better for rock and roll when it comes to certain feels. If that makes any sense. So, you know, you have people in rock drumming that play the traditional grip, which is to me, from my experience, I'm getting more of the subtle and ghost notes, the lighter dynamic notes, a lot better because of the bounce that I'm able to get. That's a really tricky question, but I'd just say for any of those grips, you just gotta rehearse and keep building your muscles to be able to, you know, finesse, play the dynamics at full volume and lower volume. You can do both grips and maximize and be able to have both at the same level. You know what I'm saying? But it just, you gotta be consistent. But also, you know, it's not that one is better than the other. So,
okay.
You know, I don't want people to get frustrated or feel like, oh, if I hold a stick this way, it's gonna maybe play better or play faster. That's not the case. Find a grip that works for you. I say it's better to master one thing than try to master a whole lot of stuff. It's great to just find one thing you can master. And just master that master grip once you get that. And then if you want to be able to master the traditional grip, and then learn how to do that and build that up. Sorry to get a long way on that answer, but hopefully that answered the question.
Nah. I mean, it helped me, and I'm sure it helped somebody else who's even more knowledgeable than I am about it. Because, like I said, that was just me kind of reading up on it, trying to get an understanding of it. So, no, appreciate that. And then my last question is just kind of around your like work ethic and your habits. You mentioned doing like some music directing, and of course, being a musician. How did you like get to this point? Like, what did your like your work regimen or like what were your habits to get you to where you are now?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. Wow. A lot of hard knocks learning. Trial and error. You know what I'm saying? I say there's two things you can learn from somebody, what to do and what not to do. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes the best experience is the experience you learn on your own. And sometimes it's just learning by example, watching somebody else's mistakes. You know what I'm saying? I've always been a watchful person. Like, so I had a lot of great mentors in my life. So, you know, I saw what they were doing, what worked with them, and I tried it out. But at the same time, I don't want to just bite somebody's entire DNA. You know, I just try to find little tidbits of what I get from this person and then the next person and then eventually trying to get my own out of it. But yeah, I say, the best experience is just learning on your own on the field. So trial and error. And just like if somebody's offering you an opportunity, a job, go study the music before the rehearsal. Like you don't go to rehearsal to rehearse, to learn the music. You go to rehearse to play what you already studied on your own time. That makes any sense.
Yeah.
So So if you're getting, if somebody gives you an opportunity to play with them, do your research. Go on YouTube and see if you can find any clips of them playing the music or get the music that you're going to be performing and learn that stuff. That way when you go to the rehearsal prepared. It's like, just like studying for a test. You know what I'm saying? You don't go taking a test and not being prepared for it. So, hopefully that answers the question that you asked.
No, it does. It does. I appreciate you answering all of those, and I will also be looking for the kale chips when they drop. So, yeah, I'll be waiting on that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. If an opportunity comes with, so be it. And so be it. I'll be down for that. You know, whatever, you know, that things that can contribute, you know, to a better snack or snack that won't make you feel as bad as eating all of the, you know, the other snacks that kind of make you feel, have that little high for the moment, and then you feel tired and lazy.
Yes.
After. Yes. Yeah, so. Yep.
Oh, man, I just got to say, this is a great interview so far. When we interview people, I always like to know what type of people we're dealing with, you know, sit down and see who they are outside of being famous behind closed doors and outside of their, you know, persona. But you are the real deal. I feel it. This nothing but good energy so far. You dropping knowledge and good vibes. You're actually, well, you know, a very good friend of mine, and she will kill me if I don't tell you. Her name is Jean Gray. She said,
"Oh yeah."
She says hello. She sends hugs, and that she's been busy, but y'all's gonna catch up. And she's proud of everything you're doing. And she also wants me to ask you this specific question about your pocket. Mm-hmm. And she said it's amazing and just recognizable, and that you have such a unique sense of timing and rhythm. So what makes your pocket so great? I'm curious.
Wow. Shout out to Jean Gray. Y'all that don't know about Jean Gray, just do your Googles. You know what I'm saying? She's been doing it, you know, before a lot of some of the other ones that are out. You know, I don't even want to say female MCs, but she's a lyricist. You know, I'm excited for her new life that she's on. You know, she got married, and I'm honored and flattered that I had the opportunity to cross stage paths and also work with her in the studio. And this is actually a good question. I think for me, because I'm also a producer as well, outside of being a drummer, I say you are what you eat. You know what I'm saying? So I listen to a lot of producers that have that type of pocket. And by me being a producer, I like it just automatically comes out in my drumming. You know, just listening to it all the time. I listen to a lot of beat tapes. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jay Dilla put out a lot of beat tapes, you know, and also, I think Pete Rock put out one of the first instrumental albums that I've heard through BBE. It was an album called Peacemental. Mm-hmm. And that was the first, like, mainstream instrumental album that came out. It's like the end of the 90s, mid 90s. I can't remember the year, but that was very inspiring. But anyway, to make a long story short, you know, by me being a producer and a drummer, being a producer really helped my drumming because, you know, when you're playing a song, there's 1,000 ideals you can do, but it's only a couple that will work to make the song pop off. You feel me? So, it just comes from, like, what I listen to. Like, I listen to a lot of the James Brown, that type of vibe, and DJ Premier is one of my favorite producers. And it just comes out in my playing, because it's hard to explain. I listen to enough of it that it just comes out, and, I don't even want to say, I mean, I think I do have something unique, but one of those things you are what you eat. If I listen to a lot of rock music, that's what I'm going to play. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If I'm playing those type of genres, but, you know, I listen to a lot of hip hop production. That's what I gravitated towards. I think that's the best way I can answer that.
Okay. You mentioned that producing is part of the reason why your pocket's so great. So I have to ask, when and how did you make the transition from drummer to producer? And was it something that came natural, or did it take a bit of adjusting, you know, to get used to sitting on the other side and producing it instead of drumming?
That's a good question. So, just a short story. My mom and dad, like I said, my mom and dad, they're both musicians. They play organ and piano in church. My mom, she put me in organ lessons when I was in, I think in middle school. And she was like, son, I'm going to want you to sub for me. I thought it was a joke. But anyway, she put me in interpreting lessons. One day, my music teacher brought a drum machine to keep time. And when he brought that drum machine, I was like, what is that? So it was bugged out because I never saw a machine that can be playing drums on its own. So that it was electronic. And I started off, well, let me just be clear. So I asked my mom if she could buy me one of those drum machines. When I got the drum machine, I was like, man, I started just making drum patterns on the drum machine, inspired by like the New Jack era, a lot of the production at that time, you know, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. It was a certain type of, like a certain type of production where they were all using this drum machine. And, I started just making patterns on the drum machine. And then eventually I got into sampling. That's when I got into like Wu-Tang, like RZA, Premier. And I was like, man, what is that? And then I had, a friend of mine gave me this Casio keyboard. It had four sample buttons on it, and it was like less than like 1 minute of sample time. So I just was making cassette beat tapes, sampling, you know, on this little Casio sampler, and I would start it that with the drum machine. I started making beat tapes and whatnot, and then that's when I started getting into those producers, wanting to make tracks, and I started emulating them. AG from Naughty by Nature, everybody that was out at the time, I started like emulating those beats. Then eventually, after a certain period of time, I wanted to, you know, come into my own. And it took me a while. And I think most producers go through that. You know, they find somebody that they admire and they just started emulating their beats. And then eventually they come into their own. So that's pretty much how I got started. I started doing that. And, I started at that time, I was born again Christian in church, and I had to figure out how to still do hip hop because a lot of the content, it was a little negative, you know, it was negative. Like they were talking,
right,
about, you know, saying things that I shouldn't be listening to. But I tuned those vocals out. I just got, you know, into the production, and then I wanted to be like the gospel premiere. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to be like the gospel. So I was like, I started sampling gospel music. I didn't know nobody that was doing it at that time, but I was sampling gospel music, and my mom, she was also the choir director, so she had all of the latest choir, you know, records and CDs or whatever came out. So I was sampling that stuff, making gospel premiere sounding peak rock beats.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I always think about like the history of R&B and gospel and how in R&B, you know, sampling gospel was something they got up on early. I don't think hip hop really got on it until later. It wasn't something that they were doing initially, and partly because at the time gospel didn't have, you know, the breaks. It didn't have that beat that it does now, that it's, you know, more influenced by, you know, the secular world, things outside of gospel. Speaking of your religion, how big of a part does that play in your career now?
Oh, that was everything. I wouldn't trade my upbringing for the world. Although certain things I feel like I've been sheltered from, because, you know, being in a, I don't know if anybody else knows about like Kojic, like Church of Christ, that's a whole different
that's like boot camp for Christians.
Oh yeah. So it gave me my foundation, which I'm thankful for, but then it wasn't until I got out on my own and experienced some life things outside of church that gave me that balance, you know what I'm saying? So although I was sheltered from some things and I was like late, you know, as far as like having, like it's crazy because I was getting these Michael Jackson and Prince gigs and people thought I knew the music already. And I was like, y'all, I didn't get to listen to this music. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I couldn't, you know, my dad wasn't in the church, my mom was in the church, but I only heard this stuff when I got in my dad's car, but I didn't even know what it was, like Parliament. So I was like, for years, I had to like go learn like stuff that I probably should have already known. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I wouldn't trade it because I feel like, you know, that type of vibe, it carried over to me as a human being. And I think that when I play, it's a certain energy that I've gotten that I don't think you can get outside of church. Because when
right.
you play in a church environment, you're being taught to play under the anointed. And that's a whole nother topic. But I learned how to play under the anointing and play from the heart and from the spirit. And that's something that I don't think I could have learned if I didn't go to church. You know what I'm saying? If I didn't have that church experience. So I feel like that was very helpful in my career and in my foundation. No judgments. Everybody have they things that they do and how they came up. But that's what worked for me. And I think that resonates in my music that I produce and also when I play and also just me as a person. You know what I'm saying? We all make mistakes as human beings. You know what I'm saying? We living and we learning. And, you know, we're not all perfect. But for the most part, you know, I'm hoping that people, after they leave talking to me or after they listen to my music, they can feel a certain type of vibe that makes them want to keep on, you know what I'm saying, with life and staying positive and putting a smile on somebody's face. Not to be long-winded, but yeah, that's that.
No, that was a great answer, actually. And my last question I'm going to ask you, you stressed the importance of different styles and different genres, and you name people on total different ends of the spectrum. You name somebody like Steve Gadd, you name RZA. If you had to name a Mount Rushmore of producers, who would be your four in your Mount Rushmore?
Ooh, come on, dang.
I got to put you on the spot.
I know it's going to hurt some feelings or, you know, people may feel a certain way. But for me, he's a premier's person for me.
Yeah.
Because, just because of his catalog and his history, and I know that he's involved with his production, he switched it off and went more into like an R&B style, but like the earlier Gangstar stuff, and Gabriel the Damsel, all the stuff he did was so ahead of his time. So ahead of his time, way that he would those couple of those breakbeats and those patterns, nobody was doing that. Nobody was doing that. And Premier, you know, he got a lot of it. But Premier will be first for me. Premier will be first. Premier and Pete Rock kind of go hand in hand because Pete Rock was to me a little bit more melodic than Premier. I mean, Premier just hit you off with the bang.
Yeah.
But Pete Rock had layers. He had a lot of musical layers, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes he would start to track off with just the bass line and then you would hear another layer of the way that he puzzled the beats when it all came in, it was like, dang. He got this from that. It was crazy. So
yeah.
It would be definitely Premier, Pete Rock, and then of course Dilla. But of course Dilla, because Dilla was like the best of both of those worlds, and he took it to a whole nother level. And then I gotta say RZA. RZA. Yep.
Oh. I mean, okay, y'all heard it here. Darude Jones said DJ Premier, Pete Rock, J. Dilla and RZA, that's his Mount Rushmore. This has been a great interview, an amazing interview. Like, wow, this is great.
Thank you.
Man, before you go, I know we held you for like an hour, but I was going to play this game with you. It's called the What's Wrong With You game.
The game is rigged. The game is rigged.
I was waiting on it.
Our engineer coming in telling blasphemous statements this game is not rigged at all. I make it to where everybody wins, so it's not rigged. Okay. Okay, I think I'll do the whole list. Okay. Okay. I'll do the whole list real quick. I gotta mute our engineer and get him off the line so we can get through it. But, okay. I can't even get it out. The first one is Marvin Gaye. It's basically, let me give you the rules before we start. It's just basically an either or game, and it's little tricks and trades in there, so you gotta, I make up the rules as I go, so
it changes. The game is rigged.
Listen, this list that I'm about to give you is just based on like replay value, like how many times you play this. It's not vocal comparisons or anything like that. It's just how many times you play this in your playlist or whatever. So the first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass.
Woo! Marvin Gaye.
There you go. You're talking right. Ain't nothing wrong with you on that. Okay, second one, The Whispers or the OJs?
Ooh, OJs.
There you go. You're talking right. That's a bonus. Like I said, I make it the rules as I go. And so it's like little tricks and stuff in there. So you're talking right on that one. Okay. Okay, the next one is...
I'm only saying OJs because I don't really know the Whispers full catalog, but OJs,
right.
That's heat that I know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So my answers will definitely vary.
Yeah,
depends on how much of that of that catalog I know. Yeah. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah, that worked either way. Okay, you're talking right. Okay. The next one is Prince or Rick James.
Ooh, you said Prince or Rick James?
Yes. That's the real one, not MJ versus Prince. That's the real one.
That's right. I'm feeling
level.
It.
So.
Ooh. All right, let's go to the next one.
No, just go ahead.
I like this.
Pick one. Prince or Rick James. Just pick one.
Oh, man. I would have to say Prince because I know more of his stuff.
Damn!
James or Rick
okay, you're talking right. Listen, that's a bonus as well. See, that's the thing. It's like, that's bonuses. If you would have said either one,
that
you would have
right.
got it. So, right. It wasn't no wrong answer with that one. So,
oh, you
can go either way. Okay, now this is where it changes up. Like I said, when I make up the rules, this is part of the rules right here. These ones that I'm about to name are very, intense for, me and my other co-hosts. I think one of, two of us that are intense about it. So, your answer actually does matter, so ain't no either or. You gotta pick, just one. And so, we gonna go right ahead. I'm just gonna throw it out there. This is specific with Michael Jackson. Off the Wall or Thriller?
Off the Wall.
You talking right, okay? You talking right. You got it right. Off the Wall. You talking right. Okay. Okay, the next one. Patty or Aretha?
Darude. Before you answer this question.
Me and Donald got that Leo energy. I know we got the Leo energy right. So, I know the Leo energy is connected. So go ahead and tell him what's right. The Leo energy is right in here. My fellow Leo, talking right on this one.
Oh, congrats. Go ahead. Happy Leo born season. Patty or Aretha, dang.
Playlist wise, who you got more songs of in your playlist?
No, don't be trying to get specific.
That's right.
I said it. That's the rule I gave
I
in the beginning.
You.
No, I'm just reiterating the rules of the game.
You're not reiterating.
Ahead,
you're rigging.
My fellow Leo brother. Go ahead.
You're rigging the game.
Gotta go to Aretha on this one.
That's right.
What?
That's right.
Wait. No. Okay. This how this goes. Okay. Usually. I would say what's wrong with you right there, but I'm going to give you a chance to, cause I knew I should have said something before that because he done messed the energy up. Okay. So you listening, you got more Aretha songs in your play. You listen to more Aretha songs than Patty.
No, I don't have either, like a bunch of their.
No, okay, okay, let me do it like this.
See, I told
okay,
you.
Okay, Patty,
I tried
somebody
to warn
loves you. Somebody loves you versus, respect.
See?
Which one are you picking?
One of those songs was a movement for civil rights. I'm just putting that out there.
Listen, James Brown's I'm Black and I'm Proud was a
brother.
Movement. No, it wasn't. Don't nobody
listen
to respect
for
drunk Caucasian people at events. That's what I'm listening to say. Jaru, what are you picking? Is you picking somebody, I need you, want you, love you, versus what's another Aretha song? Giving him something he can feel. Pick one of those. What song is you going to listen to more?
Dang.
See? Told you it was rigged.
I got a new attitude. She got, okay. What song is Patty? Say it again.
I got a new attitude with
Sight.
But jump to it.
I'm gonna have to go with Aretha.
Right. We did well.
I don't know what's going on. I thought we were on the same wave. I don't know what's going on. You're not talking right.
I love it.
You're not talking right at all, and I'm gonna have to.
He only disagreed with you on one of them, though.
I don't know where we go from here. So you mean to tell me you listening to more? If you had a choice to choose between Patty or Aretha, you picking more Aretha songs. Name me five Aretha songs. Or you getting what's wrong with you? Just name me five songs of Aretha.
This is voter fraud.
And if you don't name five songs, that means you pick Patty. Go ahead. Name me five songs.
This is voter fraud.
I said five Aretha songs. If he don't name five Aretha songs right now, he's picking Patty. That's how that works. I think I'll make it through as I go, so that's the new rule.
See.
Daru, name me five Aretha songs right now.
Daru, I told you it was rigged.
No, it's not. I'm trying to make it so he don't get it. What's wrong with you? That's what I'm trying to do.
Ain't nothing wrong with him.
This man is right.
Daru,
no. Listen, okay, I made the list up, okay?
So I told you.
Name me five Aretha songs right now, and I'm counting. I got my starter clock right here. Go ahead. I'm about to start it. Name me five songs.
Well, this is funny as hell.
One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, four Mississippi and a half.
Daru, you're not gonna name them?
Okay, no, that means you pick Patty because you can't name them.
The game is rigged.
Let's go to the next question.
Okay, so you pick Patty, evidently pick Patty on this one. Okay, the next one is Brian McKnight or Babyface. That's the last one.
I'm Babyface.
There you go, you're talking right. Listen, again, do you not want to answer the Aretha versus Patty? Can you not name five Aretha?
He already answered it.
No, he didn't.
No, we're going to the next.
Okay. Oh, my God.
He got five out of six. So well.
Okay.
He passed.
It turned to Patty because he couldn't name the Aretha song, so he evidently picked Patty from, that's a draw on that one.
I conclude
that there's nothing wrong with Mr. Daru Jones on the music side. I'm just playing around. Ain't nothing wrong with him. You won the game. Okay. Man, you have so much. Thank you so much for coming on.
What do I get for winning though?
Listen. I was gonna give you two fifty if you would have answered the Patty LaBelle, I was gonna give you twenty five, I was gonna give you some drinking money. Cause I know you about to go out, but you didn't pick Patty, so.
I was gonna cash out you some money. I told you.
But thank you so much for coming on and for answering our questions. You have so much going on. You're prepping for an upcoming release with Supergroove DMD, the band, and also you're doing some current work, or you're actually music director for P-Rock's live band, the Soul Brothers. And so what else should we be looking out for?
For right now, check for that. I got some other stuff that's in the works, but I can't mention it right now. But look out for P Rock and the Soul Brothers will be at Jazz Cafe in London on Labor Day weekend on the 3rd. And we're also playing a festival in Paris on the 6th with Kenny Garrett.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So look out for that. I have a show in Nashville that I'll be guest drumming with keyboardist.
Nice. Man. Listen, y'all don't understand who we're talking to right now. I would say right now, they say I put a lot on stuff, but I don't care. I'm going to put a lot on it, like I did last week with Chef Crawford. This man right here, right now in the industry, is the Steph Curry out here. He can't miss, okay? You talk about merchandise. He got his own drum kit. His own drum kit, people. A musician with his own drum kit. He got his own looping kit, loop products, production kits you can get online right now. His own record label, Ruzic Records, is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct.
Ruzik Records, where he produces his own content all for other people and all anybody get on there. Ruzik Records, listen, he's a Steph Curry out here. He's popping out here in the street. So y'all give it up one more time for our guest, legendary, the illest and the realest drummer out here, Mr. Daru Jones. Y'all give it up right now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Yes, we got a good clap for you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're out here killing it in the game. And you're killing it. You're just killing the game right now. So you out here popping these shit. I know you're not going to put it. That's why it's people like me got to put it on there, just to let people know who we talking to.
I'm just thankful to be working. I'm thankful, you know, it takes a lot to keep the lights on nowadays. So, you know, with the industry the way it is right now, you got to have your hands in a lot of different, you know, streams. You know what I'm saying? Just to keep the lights on. So I'm thankful. It's not easy, and everything is not what you see. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of work that people don't know that you got to put in. Sometimes you don't have a social life. Sometimes you got to put in extra hours. You know, it's a lot that you got to do. So I'm thankful. Thanks for having me on the show. I enjoy speaking with you guys, and I'm hoping that we can do this again. Many blessings.
Oh, definitely. Oh man, we can't wait to have you on. We also about to go to break, and that will we actually play one of your favorites, one of your top Mount Rushmore's produced Erykah Badu Didn't You Know record. And so when we come back, thank you so much for coming on. And when we come back from break, we're gonna hit y'all with the news talk. We'll be back, y'all.
Erica Badu. Didn't you know? All right. Welcome back to the Soul Savage Show here on Studio W The Buzz. Hey, with EB, Q Lynn Green, and Whitney. Hey, what a great interview with Mr. Daru Jones.
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
Outstanding.
Daru Jones. If y'all missed it, y'all missed a great one.
Yeah.
Because drummer extraordinaire, Mr. Daru Jones. He was on. We had him on for an hour. Yeah, it was a great show. If you missed it, don't worry, we'll have it posted on the site, this coming up week. If you listen to this now, I feel like we're gonna be short and sweet, cause I only have a little bit of news topic. I think we have enough time, we actually do have enough time to do the 6 minutes of rage. We're gonna do the savvy updates real quick, and then after that we do the, 6 minutes of rage, cause Will missed it. I don't know if we have time for this show, but we got enough time to, do it. But savvy updates, man, it's crazy. My voice is almost gone. I was over playing around in practice earlier today. We was going over the songs we gonna do for tomorrow. And I wasn't trying to sing, but they needed somebody to do the vocals for Tina Turner. I don't know why they had me singing Tina Turner, but I almost got stretched my voice out. It's doing nut bush. We doing nut bush. We throwing that in there because Caucasian people love, Tina Turner records. So we throwing that in the chat. And I was doing Nutbush, City Limits. I'm like, church, house, church, house. I can't even tell my voice is almost gone. Hopefully they find the vocals. I hope it depends on me to do this song. It's going to be instrumental. My voice, I halfway didn't even remember the lyrics.
You need me to get you like, to come and motivate you to sing?
That's actually funny because the saxophone player was like, you better go up there and sing that because I told him I didn't want to sing it. He heard it in me.
Oh, man.
Hey, you know Dansby.
Like,
you know,
sing it from here. I was like, man, if you don't leave me alone. Talking about sing it from here. You got to sing it from here.
You know Dansby can help you out, Q-Lan. You know Dansby. He'll help you out.
It ain't about that. It's about I don't have no energy to do this.
Oh.
My voice, I've been doing too much. Still getting over. I have residue of a birthday weekend. I had two birthday weekends. We celebrated the week before my birthday and then the weekend this past weekend. So I was still trying to recover from that. That's what happens when you get older. You can't, that's when you know. Cause I remember I was 21. I think and I feel like 21 still. It's like, nah, you're not that. Cause I tried to go every night. I tried to party like every night up to my birthday and then still continue on that weekend. And it's like, it's all crashing down on me. And so I'm trying to get all my energy back because I got a bunch of traveling I got to do. But yeah, man, I almost burnt my vocal cords out singing a Tina Turner song earlier today. Church house, get out. Church house, out. The highway on night train.
Hey.
It's the people sitting clean. See, y'all know the words. They call it nut bush. Oh, nut bush. They call it Nutbush City Limits. Nutbush City. Oh, that's all I know. I don't know the rest. Clearly, I don't know the words. But, you get to the savvy updates. Last week's show, we had the phenomenal Grammy Award winning producer, vocal cobwebs in my throat. But, we had Chef Crawford on last week. It was a fun interview. I know I took up most of the interview with my questions, but I had a lot. I told y'all I'll jump. I had like 15 questions and I waited to ask like three more after I got through because I was like, oh yeah. And then I still had more. That wasn't even all my questions. That's the sad part. I had more than that, but how y'all feel about like what's going on? Oh yeah, we had the new theme song. I listened to it whenever I was editing it. I was like, yo, it's pretty cool. Y'all like that? Y'all like the theme music? Y'all like that, the new music you got for the show?
Dope.
I was very Chicago house music / Vogue scene inspired. That's where
I love it. Love it.
I was wanting to get one of my friends to chant over. It's like, dun, 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 dun. Just chant over it, but I'm not good at it. I was going to do it, but I was like, I don't know how to chant. I don't mess it up. But,
Yeah, man. We back. What y'all been doing this past week? What y'all been up to?
Man, I've been run ragged. I've been in my house since Sunday night because I can't do a go anywhere else. I'm tired. I'm old. My best friend was here last week. She wants
to see you again.
Oh my God. It her first time in New York, and I tired myself out trying to tire her out. And then
your best alcoholic drunk life.
I was good and drunk. Like she actually fell and skinned her knee leaving the last spot.
Oh shoot.
Like 4 a.m, she fell in front of everybody and I didn't even help. I was in shock. I just looked at her.
How terrible are you? Wow.
I know, I felt bad. So she started yelling at me to help me and I wasn't moving. So then she started yelling at everybody watching. And so they moved to help her up and she got up and we stumbled home and it was a very memorable weekend. Then my friend got married on Sunday, and I gotta say this. Y'all gotta be specific with your requests. But we were asked, you know, to be in the moment and not, you know, be videoing and picture taking. Fine. I ain't do any of that. But when it was over, you know, everybody got their phones out and we're all filming and taking pictures. We, you know, dancing at the reception, eating. Well, apparently we weren't supposed to release pictures at all because then the bloggers got it and it became a thing where my friend had to send like an email to everybody, like take your pictures down. So I was like taking pictures down, trying to make sure, man, let me tell y'all something. I know it's hot where you are, but New York on Sunday in a suit, I'm still sweating. I ain't cooled down yet. I'm sitting in a puddle right now.
Oh shoot!
Man, we both have the same problem.
It's real. Like, what's going on with the heat? I don't know.
I don't know, man.
Man, it was over 100 last weekend, and then going into this weekend, it was like late 90s, over 100. And my breaker went out because it popped.
Wow.
It was so hot outside. It popped, and then I had to get. The freaking central air went out, and I was like, what the fuck? I mean, I was like, y'all about to the fun. And then.
Well, said his went out, too.
Yeah, mine
was popped out here, too. Like, that's everywhere.
It was crazy. I was like, yo, somebody said something funny online. They was like, I don't know what God cooking, but it's done. Something when they cooking it up, but it's done. I was like, that shit is hilarious. But, yeah. Man, it was high everywhere. I was so high, I didn't go nowhere. I stayed up in that. When the air kicked back on, I was like, yo, I'm not going nowhere. It's too hot outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, but yeah, you said at the wedding, they said you weren't supposed to post pictures?
Well, yeah, they said nobody was supposed to post pictures. Well, they said the words were be in the moment, and not be on social media and stuff. So I think everybody just assumed that meant don't post pictures while we're here. So then the next day, when I started seeing people posting pictures, I was like, oh, okay. So I posted some of my pictures. And my friends, they disconnected after the wedding. They wanted to take 48 hours and not be, you know, on anything. But I guess, you know, I mean, it was a nice email just letting everybody know, hey, can we take those down now? Because, you know, we want the official pictures to come out.
The actual wedding picture.
Yeah, the actual wedding, because they had an amazing photographer.
They should have sent a memo before that, like, hey, put your cameras there. Because I've been to places like that, I mean, weddings like that, where they said, hey, they'll say, leave your phones or whatever, don't have your phones on or whatever. And it'll be some people still trying to sneak it, like, they'll have it, like, we can still see you, my guy. Like, when you make it very obvious when you put your hand over the
right.
over it, like, I still see you, my guy. Like, you're not invisible over here. But, yeah, I see people do it all the time. They'll, like, try to sneak it, 10-second picture. But, all right, man, that's what it is. That's what happens. Your people, when they get so serious about it, I wouldn't want to be like that. Whitney, you going to be like that whenever you tell people to put phones down and stuff like that? I know you're going to have a lavish
wedding. It's not going to work. It ain't, what,
that's
nah,
a,
I don't,
like, it ain't, it's
truffles
it's
and,
hard for it to work.
Truffle butters and,
right.
and champagne and stuff like
truffle
that.
Truffle butters.
Ooh.
she like, what?
Ooh,
you get locked in jail and stuff like that.
Look, whose budget is that coming out of? Because I don't think I got a budget that look like
I'm totally,
that.
I'm totally
not there yet.
You ain't going to do none of that.
Yeah.
I went one time where they were serving Little Caesar's pizza and coupons
okay, wow.
for the reception. I was like, what kind of, I still
okay.
ate it. I was like, man, what kind of
but you ate it though.
Cheese
but you ate it.
This is some years ago. This is like over 8 years ago. 8 or 9 years ago, I went to a reception and that's all they had was pizza and
fruit
punch. I don't know if it was Kool-Aid. I think it was actual fruit punch. No, it was like some kind of fruit punch concoction. Like they had that and like some ginger ale, 7-Up mixed in it. I was like, what is
oh,
this?
Oh, the kind you get at the church.
Oh.
You go to the church, have punch, and your mama got a pineapple drink.
They put the sherbet in it, though.
Yeah, that's it.
That's church
it.
Punch.
Yeah.
That's what we had. I was like, yeah, what is up with this selection of delicacies of Caesar pizza?
Yeah.
Garlic bread and stuff. I was like, what kind of reception is this? I still went though, but it was still like, y'all what kind of, y'all could have had not, y'all shouldn't even have had a reception if this was all here, because this is like, this is like a college party, delicacies.
Man, I wanted to, I need to master the art of eating at weddings, because it's not that I'm trying to be cute or nothing, but I'll get a little food, but once you say it's open bar, I'm standing at the bar the whole night.
It's on.
That's what I want. And then later in the night, once I get home, I'm cussing myself out because I'm home starving, stomach growling, and all I got is a pack of ramen noodles, and that buffet is still sitting at the wedding, but I'm good and drunk.
I love the ways where there's an open bar and all kinds of, like nice stuff, like different selections. Like, if you... I like the ones that's like very specific, like they'll have like friends that are like vegan friendly and stuff. I like different,
yeah.
like variation, and then it's like nice decor and it's real nice, and then the music be bumping in the wedding reception. Mm-hmm. I remember I think my first and last, cause ain't nobody called me since the DJ gig. I was playing good music, but I was drunk.
You played something wrong. What you played?
Majority of the, before we even started, I was drunk, and they claimed I told somebody to shut up. Cause they was being loud, and they claim I said it was, you know, Juwan, you know who I'm talking about.
it was
actual pictures of me. I can't believe they let this circulate on the internet. This
wow.
is like, this is, they had pictures of me drinking at the, I had two drinks in my hand of Remy.
Two?
I had two of them in my hand. I was knocking them back. I don't know how many I had, but I was super lit. And I was playing like Al Green, The Whispers. I was playing a whole lot of good.
You were playing good music though.
Teddy Pendergrass,
right?
And then I switched it up. And when it was party time, the party, she was like, "Yo, put on some party music." She was very specific with that. And that was part of my contribution to the wedding gift. Was just, she's like, "You DJ this, whatever." And she had the equipment, and so I hooked it up. And so we went from like nice love songs, and then afterwards. The dancing portion of the reception, I put at back then it was like the Dougie dance. I was putting the current records out there. They was hype. That was the most hype. I had a mixed up. I had a good mix of both, like dance records, like good old school records with the new school ones. So I did pretty good, but that was my last one because they said I was drunk and being rude to people. I don't know how that happened. I don't believe that to be true.
I can see it.
I don't know. I remember telling them to be quiet because they was all they were. I had the microphone in my head. I had to be the master miss. I don't know. Is it mistress of ceremony?
Mistress of ceremony for you.
Mistress of ceremony, and nobody was paying attention. I don't know. I think I might have said be quiet for a minute. I think I was like because I got to do the introduction, and I had to do the introduction to the bride and groom. I was like. Why y'all still talking? And you know how black people is. You gotta tell them one
right.
time.
Oh yeah. And you can't be nice about it. You gotta get, gotta yell at them.
Did you say
you were right. You were right.
That's what it is.
Caucasians in there, but majority of black people, that's how y'all get their attention. Like, hey, shut up. Okay. Be quiet now.
Did you say be quiet or shut up? Did you say be quiet or shut up?
I told you I was drunk. I remember some of me trying to get them to be quiet. I don't know what was happening.
You probably cussing them out too. Yeah, she probably cussed them out.
I don't remember. Now y'all trying to be my drunk thoughts, because I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah, okay.
I'm being dead serious. I don't remember what I said. I just remember I was trying to get them to be quiet. I don't think I said shut up, like, right out.
Yeah, you probably dropped some F-bombs, too, didn't you?
No, but I had a pastor in there cracking up, because I was like, because me, the person getting married was my cousin. I was like, yo, we go back like backseats. We go back like back pockets. That's what I was telling him. I was telling the story of, like, how far we go back and stuff like that. And I had him crack it up, and then he was like turning up to Al Green as well. And as soon as I played Love and Happiness, and he was like jumping up, and I was like, okay, Pastor, I see you, Pastor. He blessed my Remy too. That's why I knew it was a good wedding reception, because he blessed it. I was telling people, I was like, yo, he blessed my Remy Red.
Oh,
I thank you to that pastor. We used to have a communion. I was like, thank you for that, Pastor, for blessing.
Pastor's got to be careful around you, Q-Lynn, because you like me. Great people. We done had a couple on here, and they almost didn't make it.
Yo, Pastor, Crawford last week, man, he actually confirmed everything I said on here, so y'all can't say nothing about me playing Prince in church no more, because he said, as long as you play it underneath there, I was like, that's right, Pastor, that's what I was doing. And he played R&B in church. Y'all acting like I was crazy. I finally got somebody to confirm the righteousness of me playing Prince, Too Short, and all that in church. Because I told y'all, that's what I used to do. Play it and mix it in there underneath the... That's what he said. That's what you're supposed to do. And that's what I was doing. So he was talking right. So y'all can't say nothing no more. Because he had a pastor to verify everything that I was doing. But we're going to go ahead with the six. Ain't nothing heathen. It's righteous. Righteous heathen. We're going to do the 6 minutes of rage real quick, and Will is ready.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. You know, actually, Q-Lynn, I've talked to quite a few musicians. They do the same thing you do. They play a lot of that R&B.
I think it's just me.
No, it's not.
It's a musician thing.
I didn't know before, but I found out since you've been talking, and a lot of musicians do the same thing you do. So, everybody, we're ready for the 6 minutes of rage. All right, here on the Soul Show. All right, let's get it. 6 minutes of rage. Hey, folks, here we go. Oh man, oh man. I've been waiting for this for 2 whole weeks. Wow. Have you guys checked out, or did you check out, these black preachers that went to the White House? I couldn't believe that. Oh, what these phony Uncle Toms have done to us. If you go into any of these churches, I think that, you might want to stand in line and ask for a refund on your tithes and offering. Say, give me my money back. And specifically, this black pastor called Daryl C. Scott. That's his name. The New Birth, I'm calling you out, brother. New Birth Revival Center in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. Go there and demand a refund. And guess what he did? Oh, back before in 2016, Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. You know the guy that's under investigation right now and is about to go to prison? They formed the National Diversity Coalition, Daryl C. Scott. You may not have known that, but he was in on this from the start. Guess what? And then along with Mark C. Burns. Remember that clown that phoned the church with one table and 6 chairs, ran out of the damn interview? And, when the reporters started asking him some tough questions. He said he was a Catholic. Not. He said he graduated from college. Not. When was one semester. Said he was in the Army. Nope. Not that either. He said that he lied because nobody would take him seriously. Well, guess what? You just lost the battle, brother, because nobody's going to listen to you right now. And then guess what? LeBron James, you guys seen that also. What a magnificent, fantastic thing he has done for the inner city in his hometown. And I applaud this brother. We really need to applaud him. And guess who? Guess what criticized him? How can you criticize something that your own administration is not doing? How can you do that? You've got this knucklehead clown, Bessie DeVos, that claims that she's the Secretary of Education. No, you appointed her to be that, and she has no background in education. Just like in HUD with Uncle Ben Rice Carson. Just what I say, and he happens to be black. Oh, God, what a shame he is. Yep. And you're going to criticize LeBron James for opening up a school, a Class A school for these fourth graders, I think third and fourth graders, and guarantee that if they go and graduate, if they attend and graduate, they've got free tuition to Akron University. And not only that, they get free lunches. I mean, a magnificent school program. And not only for these kids with books and meals and transportation, they also, anybody out of a 2 mile radius, they get a bike with helmets and things of that nature. But he goes a step farther than that. He's offering GEDs to their parents and a pathway to some solid jobs and things of that nature. And you're going to criticize this man? Guess what? He tweeted that LeBron James, and I don't know if you saw that interview or not, along with Don Lemon, and called Don Lemon the dumbest broadcaster on TV, and then said, hey, he made LeBron James look smart, which is easy to do. But Don Lemon got him back, said, hey, who is the real dummy here? Somebody who put kids in classroom or somebody who put kids in cages? Put a line under that one, because there's so many scandals around this administration. It is an absolute travesty. It is a shame. You got insider trading. I don't know if you checked it out or not. One of his congressmen just got arrested yesterday. I mean, handcuffed, locked up, and sent to jail. But he bailed himself out. I think it was a $500 million bond, along with his son. Now, in case you don't know what insider trading is, that means that you have a stock tip, or you have inside information that the public does not have, and you act on that. And so guess what he did? They cashed in millions of dollars of stock and saved themselves over $700,000 in losses. And guess what? The Trump and the public took a hit. This is a congressman right now, the first congressman to endorse Donald Trump. Oh, is there a connection there? You got money laundering. You got tax fraud. You got bank fraud. And guess what? These Republicans says, oh, they haven't found anything. What in the hell do I need to find? Tell me. You got people going to prison. You got people going to jail. You've got over 30 some indictments. Four or five have been indicted, and 35 indictments, and four or five are up for a criminal investigation. You got a Russian probe. You got voter fraud. You've got bank fraud and all this stuff, and they haven't found anything yet. Folks, there's a snake or several snakes. I thought he was going to drain the swamp. Guess what? He just filled it up. Now, you might say, oh, it has nothing to do with the president. But let me tell you something, folks. You've all learned that you are judged by the company you keep. So it's at the least that he's the dumbest and have no idea how to pick people, which is a smart of genius, or, oh, you already know, there's a problem going over there. And I talk about Devin Nunes. You guys know about him? That's the congressman that was on the investigation committee that kept running up to the White House. And there was a secret recording. Secret recording. He wants to stop the investigation. Oh, boy, he didn't know he was being recorded. These people need to keep their mouths shut. You know what? Anybody that's going along with this crap that's going on right now, you can lick my ashtray. All right, I'm back here in Studio W The Buzz, the Soul Savage Show.
Hey, we're back with that talk, man, that 6 minutes of race talk, man. He back. He been waiting to say so. I know this administration, they got stuff going on every day. It's hard for me to keep
every day.
I'll be watching. And you can't have a, like, oh, I'm going to look at it, you know, train crash. No, you have to be participant, as we say, every week on the show of during these mid-elections that's coming up November, like, I'm so tired of these, man, I saw something else that made me bad, but we ain't gonna get into that. But these people keep talking about the lessons of two evils and that your vote don't matter. That's all. Mm-hmm. I need y'all to shut up. Ooh, I can't say what I want to say.
That's so right. You know, and what about...
But yeah, they keep pissing me off with that. Cause I'm like, yo, that's why they keep taking over everything, because y'all just leave it in their hands and be like, oh, it don't matter. Well, it does matter. That, I'm like, man.
That's a shame.
That's
pissing
a shame.
Me off. Y'all. That's why I'll be on the internet like that, because that should be pissing me off, man. But
Will said, Will was talking about them pastors that met with Trump. Will said we need to stand in line and ask for our tithes and offerings back.
That's real talk right there.
I saw the picture. They ain't got it, because every pastor in that picture looked like they going to spend all Sister Johnson building fund money on a old stuff money. And I ain't with
not
it.
Not the building fund.
That's right.
Not the building fund.
Yeah,
don't mess with the building fund.
Oh, it's a damn shame. It's a damn shame. Right. And a lot of these pastors riding around with Rolls Royces, and then the congregation is starving.
Church ain't got no AC.
Right.
In the summertime, and it's hot everywhere. Everywhere.
Oh, don't I know it's hot. You know, I had a conversation, Whitney, and EB and Q-Lynn. Well, EB already know. I had a conversation with EB just, was it yesterday or whatever? And I told him that the air in the studio went out Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and I finally got it on Tuesday. Finally got somebody out here Tuesday, and it's been averaging 105 out here in Southern California.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm already mad. And I'm seeing these clowns. Yeah, I'm seeing these clowns out there. They making mega bucks out here, cheating taxpayers, cheating our citizens, and they're talking about job growth. I don't see it trickle down my foot. You know, I don't see anything trickling down to us. This is a doggone shame. And then you got hurricane season coming up, and the people in Panama, some of them still don't have electric. They don't have utilities. They don't have electric. And some of them have a tarp over their roof. They still haven't gotten the roofs fixed. Are you kidding me? And the kids being separated at the border. This is the most destructive, I can't tell you, administration ever. And I applaud you guys for talking about. Folks, get out there and vote. And doesn't it just piss you off when you talk to your friend and say, well, it's not going to make any difference anyway. Well, you need to put down that damn 40.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to put down that damn 40 and go down to the voting booth.
Yep. Q-Lynn said it.
Man, that's crazy. I know we got 11 minutes. 11 minutes left. I only got like a couple of, just one raggedy news and then we'll do the raggedy news real quick so we can get this song in, and give Will enough time to, pull up the next song. But, the raggedy news, the only one I have, before we go to break is Terrell Owens. And recently, I don't really keep up with the NFL like that, but, you know, last week they talked about, I mean, they had the NFL Hall of Fame, that's a pretty big deal, with the organization or whatever. And so, if you haven't been keeping up with the story, some sports fans, I'm not going to, like, bore y'all with all the details with that, but if you know who Terrell Owens is, I'll say he's a legend. You know, he puts up legendary receiving numbers. You know, one of the best, I would say, wide receiver that's ever played NFL. You would definitely name him. He had, you know, played at 49ers, San Francisco 49ers, Dallas Cowboys, Philly. Well, he went to 49ers and then Philly. Then Dallas, and I think he ended up at Buffalo Bills at one point before he retired. But pretty much his whole career, if you know the story of Terrell Owens, he's always been ego-driven. That's always been his thing, and he's always had been combative with 49ers. Started with 49ers. They got rid of him and made him go. He went to Philly, and then that didn't work out. And then they moved him to Dallas. I feel like he could have had chances at those three teams, I feel like he could have won a Super Bowl there. And he's always been vocal. He's always been those players that's been vocal about him not getting the ball when he's supposed to get the ball and not playing when he's supposed to play. I get that. And so the thing is, with the rules going into the Hall of Fame, the voters in there, I think it's journalists that vote players in who's supposed to get on the ballot. And the first day that I want to say most because I don't know the facts on it, but I believe some of the voters in the Hall of Fame were like, they're not supposed to include past, like, you know, controversy stuff. They're not supposed to do that. It's just supposed to be about the numbers, but a lot of them factor that in there. And so he's been mad for some years. I think a couple of years he's been eligible to be a Hall of Famer. He's been I think, and Chad Johnson have been making claims they feel like they should have been first ballot. He was a third ballot Hall of Famer. You still got in, is my point, my perspective on it before we go in. And so I just want to say he's in raggedy news because he was mad because he said it some months ago that once he was announced that he was going to be on the third ballot of being in the NFL Hall of Fame, that he wasn't going to attend the ceremony. And my thing is this, whether if you first, second, or third ballot, you still an NFL Hall of Famer. It doesn't matter. And so he feels as though he should have been considered for first ballot and all that other nonsense shouldn't have been that. But my thing is this, he's not the only person that's not been picked as a third ballot. I think Ray Lewis, he was one of the Hall of Famers this year. I think he's a second ballot or something like that. But either or, like, he's not the first football player to not get it on the first ballot. And Randy Moss and all that stuff. And so, basically, you got it, so you shouldn't be. And I just think it's a shame that this is pretty much the end of your football career and the last thing to where you're going to be appreciated for the things you accomplished in your career is the lasting impression that you're leaving with everybody is that you're basically an egotistical jerk. That's basically what you are because you made this whole thing. He did a whole ceremony in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the college where he went to. He went there in Chattanooga, Tennessee he did a whole separate ceremony. He didn't go to the actual one where it was at. He did his own ceremony. So he basically wanted the attention on him. And not to commemorate with the players there, he wanted to do his own thing. So my thing is this, dude, like, you just leaving a lasting impression that you're egotistical. And I know that's his mind frame because he's always been like that. And just from an athletic perspective, I used to be like that. Like, you think you're better than everybody. You're not servicing nobody but yourself. Because I used to do, that's why I didn't do good. The fact he did as good as he did with his ego as big as it was an accomplishment because most people don't even go that far. Because I didn't go that far because I thought I was better than everybody on the team. And you can't have that perspective going in like, oh, I can beat everybody and that, oh, you don't know what you're doing and all that other stuff. When you have that attitude, you're not going to get anywhere. So that's pretty much his perspective, and I think that's raggedy. Did y'all hear about that?
Yep.
I just thought it was raggedy.
Yep. I watched it, Q-Lin. I watched it. And I
I didn't watch it. I just saw that he had did a whole ceremony. I was like, dude, really? Like, this is what you're doing?
No, I watched my little... I watched both. I watched the ceremony, and I also watched his little third-grade tirade. It was a shame because his attitude is the thing that kept him out of football in the first place. Okay,
exactly.
Terrell Owens,
exactly.
You're a great player, but your brothers wanted you to be there. Those guys say, look, as a matter of fact, Randy Moss said, Terrell, when you're ready to join us, you're one of our brothers, man. We welcome you with open arms. His dumb ass should have been there. It should have been there. And you know, no, I've never been a fan of his because of his attitude. He would throw people on the bus. Yeah, I'm the greatest. Well, let people say that. You don't need to say that. Nope. I'm not a fan. Don't care. Don't care that he wasn't there because it was a great, great presentation.
Right. Exactly. And we're going to go to break. Well, man, I hate we just ran. We almost out of time. If something's only 5 minutes long, it's only quickly. I just want to talk about Whitney. It's her birthday today. Rest on to her. Well, I just wanted to just talk a little bit about that when we come back from break.
Oh, I had Tweeter Magic pulled up.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Whitney Houston song. You can play that. If you ain't got ready.
I tell you what we'll do. We will play Tweeter Magic, then we'll come back and we'll talk just a few minutes, and then we'll go to the Whitney Houston song. How about that? Let's get it.
Okay. So.
There goes my heart.
right, you listen to the Soul Savage Show with EB, Qlin Green, and Whitney. Hey, we'll just get it.
Hey, got
Whitney.
Exactly.
Guess what? We got Whitney Houston right here. How about that?
Hey. I was about to say, we got Pepsi Whitney on, not Coke Whitney. What is he playing?
Ow.
That's the jam right there.
Right
this
here.
This song he's playing. This is the jam. You playing this back to back, Will?
Oh, yeah. Right now.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
This is how we do it.
Give it back, y'all.
So why does it hurt so bad? I thought I had let you go, so why does it hurt me so? I gotta get you out of my head. It hurts so bad.
Why does it hurt so bad? Welcome back. This is the Soul Savage Show. What a wild show. EB, Qlin, Whitney, we're back.
And I think my favorite, that's my one, but it's like the live version I love the most because she's like killing it. Because most of the time she's like sitting down, and then she got that sweat beating down her nose. Like, you know, she starts singing when that sweat get on her nose. But yeah, that's one of my favorites. The Why Does It Hurt So Bad? That's from the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack. It was a pretty big song that was on the when that soundtrack came out. That was one of the big songs off there. But she killed, man, when she sung that song live. Man, it was crazy. But yeah, go ahead.
I said her nose wasn't sweating because she was singing, though.
Yeah, she was always sweating. It was that wig that was made her perspire.
Yeah.
It trickled down right in there on top of her nose. And somebody else, and I ain't going to tell you the joke. I ain't going to say that joke. That's what my friend said. I ain't going to say it because it just popped in my head. I ain't going to say it. But because we give her reverence and respect. But okay. Just real quick, because we're about to... What?
No,
I was not going
to
say it. I'm not about to set it up to say it.
Yeah, okay.
What? No. But yeah, before we go to wrap up the Savvy News, we get to Savvy News and wrap this up real quick because I got to head up out of here. But the birthday celebration to late James Baldwin, his birthday would have been, I think it was some days ago. I forgot the top of my head. I think it's August 2nd. Yeah, August 2nd because it was like 2 days after mine. Rest on him, philosopher, great literature writer, one of the best, the woke before it was woke. He was woke before it was cool. But, yeah, rest on him, one of my favorites. And then there's a lot of people's birthdays. Paul Mooney as well, his birthday was, on the 4th, I believe. But yeah, when was last Saturday? When was, last Saturday? What day did that fall on? Paul Mooney's, what was the date of, like, was it the 5th? Whenever it was, Paul Mooney's birthday was last Saturday. And living legend, one of the best, one of my top five, my favorite, if you had to make me pick my favorite comedian, his birthday was last Saturday. And I got a pretty good response to that. I let me know people like really love Paul Mooney. I got a good response from, I posted some videos on Instagram, and a lot of people responded to it and liked it. And also, one of the people that liked it was Paul Mooney's daughter. So I thought that was pretty cool. She liked the post I put up of Paul Mooney. It was pretty good. But yeah, he had some great, I just listened to his clips. I listened to maybe two of his past comedy specials. It was pretty good. But yeah, if you ain't a Paul Mooney fan, then something wrong with you. But yeah, we're going to get to, and Whitney Houston's birthday would have been today. Happy birthday to the late greatest vocalist. Greatest singer of all time, but pop singer, anybody that's charting, she beat everybody out. We ain't gonna get into all that, but I was just gonna say, it was a revelation I had like a couple weeks ago about Whitney Houston that I was gonna get into, but did y'all watch that Trayvon Martin doctor? Have y'all been watching that? I think it's on episode 2. It's like a weekly docu-series on BT. I'll be watching it online though. I don't watch it on TV. Have y'all seen it? It kind of triggered me because I'm like, oh man, they even got to the actual trial yet. This is like all the propaganda, like before, like all the stuff, him trying to get him charged. I'm like, oh my God, this is like triggering because I remember, like I followed the case like way before it went to trial. So I was like, yo, I remember when all this stuff happened. Have y'all been watching it?
And I haven't watched it for that reason because I remember following it.
Right, yeah, it's like triggering me already.
Too. Right.
Yeah. They already showed the ending of the process of when he went to, when they finally got him, charged or whatever. So I think the next, episode is them actually like show, I don't know how long it is, but they're just basically going step by step into the case and all the stuff, in terms of social media, play a part in it. But yeah, it's already triggering me and I was like, oh God, I need to woosah for a minute because I'm like, all this feeling is coming back up. I was like, because it was so real. I was like, those feelings was like so real when that happened. I was like, oh my God, I don't even know how to respond when they get to the trial, man. Because I'm like, oh my God,
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a whole lot. It definitely triggered you. I know a lot of people said that they're not watching it for that reason alone, but I'm just gonna watch it anyway because I like watching documentaries. But to finally end this off, we're gonna talk about Whitney Houston just a little bit. But it was a revelation I had a couple weeks ago. It was around when I was celebrating my birthday. We were just like talking, friends of mine. We were just talking, and they were telling me about. I haven't seen there's a new Whitney Houston documentary that was released in the theaters. I haven't watched it.
I saw it.
I could pretty much sum up from what they said about the documentary, and we were just talking, and then it was just like a revelation I had. And I was like, yo, I was like triggered the trauma of stuff. I'm like that, and I was like, Whitney is like one of those ones where trauma really like became her life, and she couldn't, like, that's what it was. I was like, yo, that's what it is. And I was like, trauma, I was like, is one of those things to where it's like one of those biggest hurdles that you can't get over. It's like, it's either if it's a big or small hurdle, it's like that thing, it's like the activation of fear to me, like trauma. And that's like what keeps you from like progressing is that. And whenever they told me just a little bit from what in the documentary, that piece that I was missing, I was like, I knew it was something, but I didn't know what it was. But he said that they talked about it of she was molested by a family member. And I was like, that's the piece that I was missing. And I was like, now everything makes sense now, because I was like, something happened before, because if she was doing drugs like her late teen years, I was like, something had to happen like before then, the reason why the drug use was there. And right. So I was like, that's what it was. I was like, it's one thing, like, when you're, like, when you can be free, like, she was, like, codependent on people because of the trauma. The trauma wasn't her being codependent, but even in that codependency wasn't enough because she couldn't, like, reveal that part of her still affected her. And I think that's, like, the main issue with people beyond just addiction is that trauma. It's, like, I think everybody has trauma, but it's, like, how do you, like, go through life without, like, having that trauma be a part of you, because we all have, like, traumas
right.
and stuff, and then we also mm-hmm. have other things that we do to, like, get over that trauma. Like, most people, like, having a drink when they get off work, like, something traumatic happened to where they approach their career like this, or they had a traumatic relationship or traumatic job or something like that. Just anything to where they react a certain way, and they either, like, fold up, or they'll turn to something else. And so I was like, her trauma was that. Like, she could never get over that. And so even with the relationship with Bobby Brown, like, he was that, like you just imagine, she couldn't basically be her, whatever that felt, if she was, like, bisexual or lesbian, she couldn't be that completely, because if you just add on with her mama, the traditionalism of Christianity, like, oh, it's not right, that's not a right, that's a lifestyle in quotation marks. Like, you can't live like that. And then also, if you add on her, you know, being a superstar, and add on all that stuff, and so you basically got to put on a face, like, everywhere you go with everybody, like everybody you deal with. So I was like, yo, that's what it was. I was like, and it just made me think about, like, trauma and, like, the depths of it and how we all, like, deal with it. And I was like, yo, like, she couldn't deal with the trauma. Like, it was so traumatic, to where she couldn't reveal any of that because she was so closed off from everybody. Like, that part of that vulnerability, she couldn't reveal to anybody. I was like, yo, that's some deep shit right there. But go ahead.
Yeah, it also carried over, because I saw the movie. It carried over even into how she raised Bobby Christina.
Yeah,
because they were saying when it happened, when her and her brothers were molested, that's who their mother would leave them with when she went on tour. And when she was working, when Sissy was, you know, recording and traveling. And they talked about it a little in the documentary. If you notice, when Bobby Christina was small, everywhere you saw Whitney was where you saw Bobby Christina. She wouldn't leave Bobby Christina with anybody, because she didn't trust anybody. Like, this was her cousin. This is a family member who had, you know, molested her and her brothers. So she couldn't even trust other family around her daughter. And I think trauma like that, it kind of carries on. It not only affects the person who was traumatized, but it affects everyone around them, their spouse, their children, people they work with.
Yeah, absolutely. Whitney, you got anything to say before we go? Because we're about to wrap up in like 30 seconds. You got anything else?
Just real quick on that, people can go look it up. It's called ACEs. It's your ACE score, and it looks at like adversity and childhood trauma. So you can actually kind of look and see kind of where you fall in that, because there's a lot of people that don't realize that they went through traumatic experiences and that it's impacting their adulthood. So you may check that out.
Yeah, you don't have to be an addict to that'd be my savvy
right.
talking. You don't have to be an addict to do that, because it's like traumatic stuff that I had to get over too that I didn't realize impacted my work ethic and then also just personally, like, how I deal with everything. That's like, right. That is like couple of traumatic. It is like, oh wow. And I had to unpack that in therapy and all that stuff. And it's like, oh wow. Like, that's what it is. But, thank y'all so much. Y'all have a Savvy Heathen Talk. We about to wrap up. Y'all got a Savvy Heathen Talk.
Yeah. Y'all stay cool this week, man. You know, stay inside.
Please.
Tell Satan to get out. That's another Savvy Heathen Talk. Satan, stay out of my front seat.
That's right.
Go take a shower or something and then come back. Like, don't.
Absolutely.
Stop chilling in my front seat. But thank y'all so much for tuning in to Soul Savage Radio. We will be back next Thursday. Every Thursday, 4 to 6. I keep messing up on that because I'm thinking about Friday again. But every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 to 8 Central Time. And then also 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. I almost said Central again, but that's all right. All right.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for tuning in.
To the Soul Savage Show. And my heathen talk is, if your pastor's riding around with a Rolls Royce and eating filet mignon, and you're subjugated to beans and rice and ramen noodles, then ask for a refund. And EB, get your money back. And EB, I know you have a suggestion for the audience. Come on with it. Come on, EB.
I think he already left.
All right.
Oh, yeah, in the cojones. I ain't gonna say that word.
We'll save it for EB.
In the cojones. Grab him in the cojones. All right. Soul Savage Radio.
Folks, we're out. All right. Thank you so much for listening. All right. Jan, tune in every day. Coming up. In a few short minutes, we have Mellow Moves with Mr. Melody. If you like that old vintage jazz, and we're talking about John Coltrane and blues, B.B. King, Albert King. Stay tuned to The Buzz. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Tell your friends about it. Just go and download that app if you have an Android phone. That's IMG2. Or you can go and visit us at StudioWBuzz.com. STUDIO. Don't forget the WBUZZ.com, folks. It's been our pleasure. Stay tuned. All right. Let's get it. All right. All right. This is Studio W The Buzz. Hey, you looking for a great cut? Great style? Visit Luxury Cuts Barbershop. Showcases some of the finest barbers in Southern California and serving the Inland Empire, the IE, for over a decade. The professionals at Luxury Cuts will give you the cut and style you've been looking for. Located at 1357 West Kendall Drive. Let me give you that again. 1357 West Kendall Drive in San Bernardino. Why don't you give them a call? 909-473-3787. Again, 909-473-3787. Visit Luxury Cuts. Hey, enjoy the rest of your evening. This has been The Buzz.